Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and it's good to be with you. Over the last several weeks on this program, we've heard from professors and pastors speaking about racial justice. This difficult and sometimes uncomfortable conversation continues this week, and we'll be hearing from local women. An uncomfortable conversation with Sharon Tucker and friends focuses on issues of racial justice. Special thanks to Patty Hayes, Rachel Tobin-Smith, Marilyn Moran Townsend, and Faith Van Gilder for organizing Avow events in our community. And special thanks to Luke Hollinger for providing audio for this program. Councilwoman Tucker will introduce her fellow panelists in a moment. Please enjoy the show.
I'm told that we only have 2 hours together, right? Maybe hour and 45. And so I want to make sure that we have enough time to get all of our deep-rooted questions out. So I did ask the panelists that are in front of me to send me their brief bio. And I said 2 or 3 minutes or sentences about yourself. And I was gonna read those, but in lieu of doing that, I'm going to ask the panelists to give me, to introduce themselves and then just say one really burning thing that you would love for everyone to know about you, because I think the rest of it will come out as we continue to talk, okay? Why don't we start with you, Chanel?
Hi, everyone. My name is Chanel Love, and I thank you all for being here. One thing I would say about myself is I've always been a very direct and honest person. I believe in transparency, and so with that, I'm open to being honest and accepting your opinions and your questions and also giving you back my knowledge that I know.
Love it, love it, love it.
I'm Dee McKinley. I thank Sharon for asking me to be a part of this. Because this is so dear and true to my heart, rights for everybody. And one thing I want you to know, especially about me, this is my 46th year as gospel announcer on WBOI.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Kim Barnett Johnson, and I am originally from Fort Wayne, born and raised. I'm excited about being here. Thank you all for being here. I'm looking forward to our dialogue this evening. I tried to think what burning thing about me. I've been married for almost 29 years. That's exciting to me,
yes.
So I'll tell you that.
Amen.
I am Paulette Nellums. I am currently serving my second term with East Allen County School Board. And if I had to say something that was really pressing, it is education. I just believe it is the civil right issue of our time. And so I am excited that Councilwoman Tucker asked me to be a part of this panel. And I would just like to thank you all for coming.
All right. Thank you, guys. So when we worked to put the panel together, I wanted people who I knew were passionate about African American history, about diversity, about women, and who were not faces that you see every single day. Because I want people to be able to hear us just have a conversation about race. And I'm told that this is uncomfortable conversations, but what I would like to do is to make us comfortable about talking about uncomfortable things. We have to really start to normalize the difference that I'm black, you're white, Latino, Puerto Rico, whatever it may be, and make that normal. So, Paulette, you had mentioned that your burning desire you wanted everyone to know was that you are big on education. Along with education, for many of your years in serving our community, you have served as NAACP president and just as a sole advocate for children. Share with me, if you would please, how the current affairs, in your opinion, is having a negative impact on you and what you see, how it's affecting children.
When I talked to parents when the pandemic happened and children were not allowed to go to school, which was a good thing. We want to keep them safe. But there were a huge segment of our population where children were not able to get the extended teaching that they needed. and that they will need in the future. So that concerned me. I had a grandson that special needs and was not able to get any of the tools that he needed. But my field of expertise is early childhood, so I was able to help him. But there are children that did not get that. They did not have anyone at home to help them with their work and didn't have access to technology. And even some of the districts did not have the technology up to help them. And so I wonder, I don't know, I just wonder, when school resumes, what will that do to those students? How do we begin to educate those students that who already were left behind, and now there's been a bigger gap? So I'm very concerned about how do we bridge that gap of those that did not have the tools.
And I've heard that mentioned by a lot of people, right? Like, how do we make it fair for all around? And it's no secret that many of the students that resided in Southeast area and areas that are struggling financially aren't necessarily able to have internet access, right? And so when we pull them out of school, and we parents all of a sudden became homeschoolers, and they were challenged with how to readapt life for COVID, then we see that George Floyd is murdered on the street. And that opened up a whole new world, right? I have a 17-year-old daughter at home who says, "Mom, now people are starting to feel free at posting their racism on social media. And I'm scared to go back to school because some of the kids that normally wouldn't have said these things are now feeling free to say how they actually feel." And so one of the things that we always hear is when someone says, "Black lives matter," another person may reply and say, "Well, all lives matter." What do you think when you hear that, Chanel? What does that make you think about?
I feel like when people respond to "Black lives matter" with "all lives matter," they're being insensitive to the whole point of "Black lives matter." People are not trying to say that Black lives are better than others, but more saying we need to be included. There are things that are happening to African Americans that wouldn't easily happen to someone else. Just like African Americans will become nervous being around the police, and a Caucasian person might never think about that. They just see the police as being good people who just protect and serve. But there's so many underlying issues that come from being African American and how you're treated when you go places. And so we say Black Lives Matter because we want to be included. Everyone needs to be treated equally. I shouldn't be fearful of my life just because I'm African American.
Yep. Anybody else want to touch it?
I think that's a great question. And I also, you know, I think hearing that, my first response is probably always to say, you know what, you're correct. But I see it as an opportunity to educate. As you talk about education, I see it as an opportunity to educate, because I had a really good friend say to me last week, she said, "You know, I guess I've just been in a hole. I guess I thought things were better." And so I think that as educators, because I am also an educator, I work in a higher education institution, I just see it as an opportunity for us to begin to educate and educate people about the history, right? Because there has been so much that has happened over the past 50 plus years, and I can only say 50 plus because that's about how old I am. I can't talk about a whole lot before that. But in my lifetime, there has been a lot that has happened that people have just glossed over like it doesn't exist. And so for me, I take that opportunity to say, you know what, you're right, but let me talk to you a little bit about my history, the history of Black Americans, so that you can understand why we are saying today Black Lives Matter, why we feel like we need to reiterate that to you.
As a kid, or the product of the 60s, who marched with Dr. Martin Luther King, and to see what's going on today and compare it to what was going on in the 60s, it's like deja vu. It is back again. And that lets me, it makes me think that out of all of the dogs and the fire hose that I ran from just to make things better, that, you know, we've been living in a bubble all of a sudden, and now all of a sudden that bubble has been burst. And now it's a new day, but it's the same old story. So when people say all lives matter to me, my thing is that if there were no black lives, there would not be any all lives. So, you know, don't make a comparison like that, you know. So when I get the opportunity to take kids back to Kelly Ingram Park and show them my tree that the fire hose blew me against, and when I see these kids nowadays, you know, marching and doing all of that, and they say, well, it's more white kids who are there. There were white people who were marching with us as well in the 60s, in 1963, and to know that Viola LaRusso lost her life, you know, on that. So that's what I say about Black Lives Matter. As far as education is concerned, Fort Wayne Community Schools did not have technology for our kids to learn, you know. So every day we were online talking, Zooming, saying, how are we going to get to these kids? So we start doing, you know, home visits with our masks, with home visits, trying to find out what kids needed what. But it's so much that is needed. And so we got a long way to go still.
So let's get a little bit deep, if you don't mind, because one of the things I think that has frustrated me, and when we've had conversations in our board meeting, it's uncomfortable, right? Because anytime you look at racism, that requires you to look at yourself. And if we have to look at ourselves, then we have to ask the question, am I contributing to this factor, right? And then no one wants to put the mirror up to them and say, I could be responsible for perpetuating systematic or institutional racism. And so one of the things that has always come out and always seems to rub me wrong is that when a situation like George Floyd takes place, my white friends will look at me and say, well, what can we do? As if I'm supposed to have the answer. What do you say to that when something happens like this and they expect black folks to have the answer?
What do you mean, what can we do? I mean, you know, what have you done? And maybe what you have done has caused it to be what it is now. So therefore, what are you going to do? Why are you out looking at me for the answer? You got all the money, you got all the guns, you got all the everything. So what are you going to do? So why you want to put it on me? And I try to say that without sounding mad, but I'm mad. You know, I am really, really mad when you gotta ask me, what are we going to do? Or what can you do? So, you know, I kinda step back and try to be silent and say it's on you. You tell me what you're gonna do and we'll talk about it tomorrow. But that conversation never comes back. So then I get to be, why are you so hateful when I start saying, what are you going to do? Because I'm going to throw it back at you. I'm going to throw it back at you. I'm not going to let you be comfortable in asking the question, what am I going, what can we do? You know, come up with a solution and say, right, this is what we're going to do, and that will make a difference.
I would say when people ask me that, it's part of just feeling like you're not included in the problem. If someone passed away, that's still a human being. It doesn't matter their race or who they are. And I think people have to hold themselves accountable and say, well, if I know someone who is racist or I know a situation has occurred, what connections do I have? What resources do I have that I can help others? And so with that, well, if I know people who are racist and I'm a different culture, like, you know, a different race, I'm going to educate them. Because if I say something to them, they might not take it the same way as it coming from you, and they see that you guys have the same similarities. And so just do your part to educate the people in your community, and then it'll be one person, and you've talked to five people, now that's six people who know. And then if another six people do the same thing, then it spreads, and then everyone is aware of the problem and also how to help.
You know, when And I've been asked that question. But until we address the real issue, which is systematic, we got to change how we go about electing people to office. We got to make sure that we are a part of the whole process, meaning we have got to be where these decisions and policies are being made. We got to be in the boardroom. I didn't know a lot of things until I became a school board member. And then once I got on the board, I was like, oh, wow, that's how that zip code over there is getting the things that they want. And so we got to make sure. One thing that really, really got me with this whole George Floyd thing is that people started to really show themselves, people that I'm great friends with, but on social media, they were able to really say who they were. That they were speaking their hearts. I read an article in the paper from attorney Tim Pate. He was a former city council member, am I correct? And it just, I mean, it hit me like a knife in my heart because it said what I wanted to say, but I couldn't say it. I wanted to say it. I wanted to go to the rooftop and scream it, that they are not putting black people in position of power. They are not putting them in. I mean, we have, and it's not that I'm not friends or anything. I just watch the system. I was a foster parent for 15 years, so I've been part of the judicial system. I used to go into the courtrooms and just watch trials. So I would see the disparity in the sentencing of young black boys as opposed to young white kids. And I was just, that floored me. Then I met an attorney. She's a magistrate, Lori Morgan, here in the city. I believe she is the only black. Then I read where Tim Pate write about these positions, the judgeships coming open, the woman gets overlooked. Why? When you have the credentials. But that's one thing that's holding us back. It's a systematic problem, and we have got to address that. We cannot be afraid to say, no, this is wrong. She's qualified. Or he's qualified. We can't say that. And I'm going to say this year, and another thing that I see is being on a school board is, you know, it's the good old boys club, if you will. I read another perspective from a Mr. McDonald on Sunday.
Mayor McDonald.
Okay, I read it in the paper, and he talked about all these boards that were filled, no one black, all white male. Then he talked about Sweetwater hiring 26 new people in position of power, not one was black. There's a problem. That is the problem right there. If you don't have us at the table, how will you know what the needs are? I was at the table, and I said to my district, and I'm not ashamed, it's just time to get the stuff out. I said to them, it really is, it's time. I am angry about this stuff. And I said to my district, why don't we have any blacks in positions of power around here? They said to me, well, we don't have anyone that applied. I said, well, how are you recruiting? You got to learn how to recruit. So I said, have you went to HBCUs? One of the board members said, what is that? Are you serious? So those are problems that don't
feed
get me
to,
started.
Feed to.
Yes.
Feed to systematic. So how do we avoid that? And I know you wanted to answer that, and I'll circle back to you, okay, Kim? But how do we have those hard conversations? Because one of the things that I try to do is stay true to my truth, right? I am who I am. My husband said it on the way here. I think he was trying to be smart, Alec, but he's like, you always consistent. He's like, wherever you are, you the same person. You always consistent. But I try to speak my truth, whether I'm in the room with a full room of men or whether I'm in a room with women, I try to be and speak my truth. But how do we get that message out that there is a lack of equality because there has been a lack of attention? Bring that to the surface without being called the angry black woman or without making the white male or female feel like we are devaluing them in order for us to be valued? How do you do that?
I honestly believe that that would come with a change of heart. We can have these conversations until we turn blue in the face. But until individuals are really, really sincere about changing their heart and their understanding about race and race relationships, we're going to be in the same spinning space. And so, you know, in order to have the conversation, you have to, as Paulette said, you have to be at the table, but you also have to be at a table with people who are comfortable with you being at the table. I don't want to be at a table if I'm just there to be your token person. I want to be at the table because you value me as an individual and you want to hear what it is that I have to say. So that makes a huge difference. But until we can get individuals to have a change of heart, we're going to be here for a while.
We have to get at the table. And if it's two of us at the table, we got to be mindful that we're not played against each other, because that's been the conquer and divide ever since we've been at a table. So some of us have been at the table, but then we'll talk in this ear about the one who looks like me. So it teaches me not to trust the one who looks like me.
You
so what good
that.
Does it be? It mean to be at a table when you're still not valued? And, oh, we know how to do this. When I used to tell people, I don't know why we're so excited about desegregation and all of that, because of the fact that before it was, there were black-owned businesses everywhere. And we trust each other everywhere. There was Black Wall Street, there was all of that. And when we're viewed as if though we are a threat, then we're not, we'll be sitting at the table and our opinions won't matter at all.
Okay, so Elder, you are one of the senior members on the panel. You were a part of the March on Selma. You have already mentioned that you have been sprayed in the face, and what brought you to Fort Wayne was school freedom. When the Pastors Alliance was, for those of you that aren't aware, the Pastors Alliance had sued the school community because they were not getting equal treatment for black schools. And so they opted to pull all of the black students out of the public school system and educate them within the church system. So while Pilgrim has school classrooms in the bottom of it, that's why Jerusalem had classrooms. And so Elder ended up in Fort Wayne because you were a part of that movement. And you had mentioned that now you see history repeating itself and that you're frustrated, that you kind of feel like, what was it all for? And so what would you tell somebody like Chanel sitting next to you, would be the youngest member on the panel, to continue that work that you've put in?
Well, I would say to Chanel and those who are of Chanel's age that get in it to win it. In other words, go out and do protests peacefully and all of that, but make sure that you're doing it because you want to make a change, not just so that you can be a number or whatever. And people will look at you as if though you are one of those destructive people who want to start, you know, tear a property and all of that. I feel that what I did in the 60s and now what you all are doing in the 20s, it makes a big, big difference. But you got to be ready for all kinds of everything that's going to come from your age group, going to come from your mama and your dad's age group. But the thing is that you still have to go on and do it. My parents told me, don't go out there and get in that mess. Yep. And I'm sure yours probably is telling you the same thing. And they used the word mess. Don't go out there and get in that mess, because if you go to jail, I'm not coming to get you. So my thing is that, so either I had to be afraid of Bull Connor or be afraid of my dad, and I wasn't afraid of neither one of them. So other words, I went. And I went, and then the first somebody showing up to get me out of jail was my dad, and I was mad as you know what, because I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay there so that I can help keep talking to the kids who was so afraid. And for some crazy reason, I was not afraid. But the thing is, Chanel, you got to keep pushing and keep pushing, because it's going to be people who are going to tell you it ain't going to do any good anyway. What y'all doing all that for? And I'm sure you already heard it. You know, don't go in and get in that. But the thing is that we must continue the fight. The fight is not over. And it may not be any protest down there still at the corner right over a few streets over, but we still have to keep fighting. We have to keep fighting until equality means equality, because it does not. And you got people saying, oh, they're going to quiet down and it's going to go away, so don't worry, we ain't got nothing to worry about. But you better be scared, because it's not over. It's just not getting started. And until life is taken out of my body, I won't run with y'all, because I can't run with you, but I guarantee you I'll be there when you need me. I'll give you water. I even bring you bail money if I have to. But the thing is that it's time for you all to become the young people who we were in the 60s. Dr. King said, if it had not been for the young people, the movement would have died in Birmingham. And I know that that's right. We all left school. We kept going and going and going. And I'm glad I went. And I'm glad I got something that I can show the kids. But I can't run with you today, okay?
People that see Chanel, oftentimes, because they're young, they think that they don't really have any voice or anything to contribute to the conversation. But that's what we need. We need a young perspective on these boards. We need a fresh anointing in there. Woo. Someone with that has vision, right. You know? And so I would say to Chanel, please get involved, get on a board, start early. And do that. I don't care where you serve at. Just serve. Get your feet wet. Get in there and serve, so you'll start making a difference. And you can go back and get those, your age group, and say, come on along with me. Let's try to make a difference. Because that's what it's going to take. You guys are going to have to get in there and not, like Kim said, not just be a token on the board. But when you're there, you know what? I know I only have one voice. And then most of the time, I'm outnumbered on the board. But one vote. Most of the time, I'm outnumbered. But I tell you what, they definitely hear my voice.
All right. So I want to ask you another heavy question, right? Because we keep making it black and white. We keep looking at the disparities between the black folk and the white folk. But how do we think that this is having an impact on all those people in the middle? Latino, Burmese, Hispanic? Any words of wisdom or advice for that? Because we always talk about the black people and the white people. I recently had a conversation with one of the Burmese elders who feels like they're being discriminated against amongst African Americans. What would you say to them? Anyone?
Either. You got to come in. I mean, did you put word out that you were going to have this? Do they know about it? Well, you got to come. You got to come where the conversation's at. And so you got to get involved. And I don't know if our messaging is wrong, so maybe we need to message more, but I trust that you definitely got the word out. You got to come. You just can't stay in your own little silos and say, this is what works for me. We got to get out. So if they want to be, I know I said on our, I serve on my housing addition board as well. And so I make an effort, because we do have some Burmese brothers and sisters that's moving into our addition. And so I've made it, I made an effort to get out and try to let them know who I am, introduce myself, and anything that we can do to help them assimilate to our area. I've tried to do that. But I can feel the resistance. But we just got to keep trying to get the message out. Come where it's been, where we're having conversations to bring about change.
I think one of the dilemmas or breakdown is a lot of people think racism is black and white, but it's really racism against everybody, because the stuff that has occurred to even the Hispanic people of being in cages and being separated from their family, that affect me. I wouldn't want my family member to be taken away.
Right.
So that equally hurts me, just like the movement of George Floyd is not because he's African American. It's because I have a father that I love, and I wouldn't want my father taken away. And then I have nephews, four nephews, that are going to grow up in this world, and I don't want them to have to deal with that. If I can play a part to break this generational curse of racism in our system, I'm going to do my part. Because I wasn't out there protesting until I wasn't out there protesting until there was a march that I knew wasn't genuine. And so with that, it put a fire in my heart because I'm like, this has to stop. We will never be able to fix the problem if we keep acting like it doesn't exist or we keep sugarcoating it, just like she's saying, being a token on a board. Like, if we all get on this board and just become yes men, we're not making a change.
Come on, baby.
And that's my whole point. That's why I stand out here, and I don't think it's because he was black, because if it was a Hispanic person who got killed, I would be equally upset. We're all human. It doesn't matter your color, and that's my whole point.
That's good.
I didn't turn it off either. No. Okay. The response that I have kind of goes back to what you said earlier, Ms. Dolores, when you were talking about being on the committee and being one of two and then kind of being against each other. I honestly feel like there are issues within our social system that have, in many respects, pitted us against each other. And I believe that that's why there's a lot of hesitancy when it comes to me speaking on Burmese issues or Hispanic issues. We've been kind of taught and trained to be against each other, to think that we are enemies amongst ourselves. And we really, truly are not. And once we realize what's happening and then form together, there's so much power in that, right? But because the Hispanics are over here doing this, and the blacks are over here doing this, and the Burmese, everybody has their own little population and their own little thing happening. You know, isolated, yes, we can get some things done, but if we work together, my God, the things that we can accomplish if we work together.
All right. So we all here have said how much we love equality, working for, with, to help make a difference, children. And I don't know about you guys, but when I go and look at my Facebook feed, the first thing I have to do is hit the backspace, and go, don't get involved in that, Sharon Tucker. Because I could just let it rip sometimes, right? I could just let it go, and then I'm like, no, this ain't your fight. But I'm surprised at some of the comments that I have from people who I, at one point in time, maybe considered my friend. Right? My ally. And it especially becomes disheartening when I see sometimes friends will, if someone says Black Lives Matter, and then they will come in and say, well, then you believe or support right to life. I told you I was going to get heavy, didn't it? Okay. And I say, well, yeah, I support right to life. I support right to choice, and I support right to live. Why do you think there is a comparison if I say Black Lives Matter and someone then wants to reply, then you should support right to life, yet right to life has been very silent on Black Lives Mattering? Anybody want to touch that one?
I think some people do it based on their group or who they hang out with or their position that they're in. But when you support something, you should support it 100%. I wouldn't want All Lives Matter to support Black Lives Matter if they don't believe in it, because then it would be fake.
That's good.
Like, one of the things that I appreciate about what's going on right now is people are speaking their truths. It don't bother me that you're showing your true colors. Thank you for finally showing up. So that's just how it feels. So it doesn't bother me. Like, I know all this dilemma with companies not supporting. I don't want you to do it if you genuinely don't want to do it. That's not going to change anything, because it's going to be fake. And we're really trying to change a real problem, and we can't keep faking it.
I love her. Y'all see that? Look at that. She is a product of Girls Rock, who is... Miss Danita Washington, trustee Danita Washington, who has Girls Rock, is sitting over there. Go ahead. That was an awesome answer. Anybody else want to touch that one?
Every time it seems to be something that's about us as Black people, then somebody always want to throw something else to tag along with that, you know, which really, really, and it didn't just start recently. It has always been, as I've grown up. When we were marching in Birmingham, the movement for equal equality for black people, then following that, it was the march or the movement for equal equality for white women. Then following that, it was equal equality, everything. But what I'm saying is that once we start taking a stand as black people to do what's best for us, somebody always want to tag something else along with that to try to devalue what it is that I'm talking about. I'm not on that conversation right there. Why don't we just stick with this? And if we can just all go in one direction and get that corrected, then we can pick up all the rest of it. But if we're divided here, there, and everywhere, we get nothing done. So, you know.
All right. All right, before we open it up for questions to the audience, I do have one more question that I'd like to ask the panelists myself, right? So when we had Mr. Kaepernick kneeled on the ground and peacefully protest, he was, as you said, Elder, equated with disrespecting the flag. When we've had people stand up and loudly protest, they have been accused of being thugs and hoodlums. However, when we have people who lose a sports game and decide to burn down a building or flip over a car, they're called faithful sports advocates. What would you say to the person sitting across who's invited you to dinner because they are interviewing you for a position that you've been dying for, and they say, you know, this whole Black Lives thing, that's how it happens, right? These are how the conversations go. You know, that whole Black Lives thing, yeah, I just think it's overdone. What do you think about that?
Keep your job, because it's not for me. Bottom line, I don't know why you invited me, because you know, keep your job, because that's not for me. It's not overrated. As a matter of fact, it's a little bit underrated.
I'm with Ms. Dolores, honestly. You know, I that would probably take me aback. Yeah. You know, because I would wonder, why am I here? If you're feeling bold enough to make a statement like that, why am I here and why are you interested in me? And what that would take me back to that whole token thing of why are you interested in hiring me if that's really truly how you feel. So I probably would end up in the same place of, okay, well, thank you for having me and see you another day.
All right, speed round. Is it African-American or is it black? Which one is good to say? Anybody? Is it African-American or is it black?
It depends on the person.
Yeah.
It depends on the person.
Because educate us, because somebody out here wants to know what's the right thing to say. If I come up to you and I say, if I say she's a black woman or if I say she's an African-American woman, which one do you want to hear? Or tell us why
I'm going to say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Because that is the era that I grew up in. So I'm black. Bottom line, I'm black. I am black, and that is my final answer.
You'll need to call a friend. You'll need a lifeline.
I am not offended if you call me black.
Chanel, you were getting ready to say something.
Oh, I said it depends on the occasion, because I see, like, when it's professionalism, African-American. Don't say black. Or, like, even when I'm talking, when I say something and I'm being serious about what I'm saying, I'll say African-American, but, like, Black Lives Matter or my black people or power to the people, you know, like all of those. It just really depends on the occasion.
Okay. See, I had to just come to the realization that, you know, I just happen to love being a black woman. So I had to just come to a consensus with my own self. Who do I think I am? And it had nothing to do with the word black or African. It's just that I know who I am, and being called a black woman just makes me feel prouder and stronger. So I like being called black, a black woman.
I was gonna say, I'm sorry. I don't really, I don't necessarily have a preference when it comes between black and African American. I do know what I don't want you to call me. But there's a term that's being thrown around that I really don't like, and that's the term minority. Because if you look up minority, that means minor less than. And I don't consider myself less than anybody. Okay. So that's a term that really gets under my skin, is when we are labeled as minorities. I'm not minor. I'm major. And I want to be considered that way.
I love that. I'm not quite where y'all at yet. I'm just being transparent, right? Because sometimes it just depends. I just say Sharon for me, right? But if I'm with a certain group, I'll say African American. And if I'm with another group, I'll say black people. And then sometimes I say my brown people. So I got to get where y'all at. All right, do we have a couple of questions from the audience?
Hello? Okay. Yes, we do. The first question is, can you tell everyone why the police and law enforcement system has been a key factor in the oppression of black people?
Can we tell everyone why the police and law enforcement system has been a key factor?
To me, it starts with power. And the police department, the justice system, they have a lot of power. And because they have that power, you know, you have some that use it appropriately, and then you have a whole lot that don't use it appropriately. But a lot of the, you know, the videos, the movies, the articles and things that I've been reading, a lot of it has stemmed from the police department, from the justice system, where, you know, a lot of the inequalities are taking place. And so it stems back to power, and those individuals have power and they just abuse it.
I think it's deep ingrained, right? Because when you think about when the law or the bill was changed that we couldn't bring any more slaves into, that meant that we now have to figure out a new way to get labor. And the newest way to get that labor was to incarcerate, right? And once we incarcerated, we then had free labor, and we received money from the federal government based on those incarcerations. And so systemically, it has reigned from the loss of that power all the way down to continue seeing the breakup of black families, because you see African-American men, of which I love African-American men, be arrested and charged at greater lengths than you see non-African-American men. See, I just did it right there. Be charged at. And so I think you have to go well beyond my years, right? And I'm only 12. Well beyond my years to pick up that systemic racism, power and fear that goes beyond it.
The next question is, what do you wish for the committee now started by council, Councilwoman Tucker, and Councilwoman Chambers? What do you hope it will highlight, and how can these points be held accountable?
Okay, so let me make sure we get that one on the record right, okay? It is, Michelle, what's the proper name for it? It's the Commission.
It's the Commission on Police Reform and Racial
Thank
Justice.
You. Commission on Police Reform and Racial Justice. I am not on that committee. Councilwoman Chambers is chairing that committee, and it was started by the mayor. So we want to make sure that we get that out properly. But what do we expect to see from that?
Well, one of the things that I really hope is that they selected people who are going to be honest. I think if you just put a committee as diverse as you want and everybody is yes men, it will never solve anything. So that's my first hope. One thing that I do hope is that they hold the people who have these positions accountable, because I feel like that's where the breakdown, the issue is coming, is people have taken on titles and roles in our community to make decisions for our community, but everyone is not accounted for. So that's what I just hope from the committee.
What I hope from the committee is to see more black people and African Americans and brown people sit on boards of power. And that list should be given to Michelle and that committee, and they should strongly, strongly say to the mayor, you need to put these people here. And I think they got a list going anyway, but nobody ever asked me.
Or me.
Next.
How does one navigate and work with individuals who you feel that not, who feel that not all Black lives matter?
That's a great question. How does one navigate and work with individuals who you know when they go home, they like all them Black lives don't matter?
You know what? We've had to do it so long. We do it every day. We've had to do it so long. I remember as a sixth grader, I moved from a predominantly Black neighborhood into an all white school. It was total cultural shock for me. And so as a sixth grader, 11, 12 years old, I had to sit back and watch the teacher always call on the same students. They were the leaders in the line. They were the smartest one. And do you know what that does to a 10 or 11 year old kid? I mean, it really makes you think that something is wrong with you, because the teacher don't call on you, they don't put you. So at 12, I would think I was 11. So at 11 years old, I got very angry one day at school. And I got together with a group of Blacks. It was only about 25 of us in the school. And the ones that were not afraid to follow me, they did. And I went to the assistant principal and I told him, you're prejudiced and you're not right. I mean, I'm 11 years old, but I was hurting and I wanted some change. I wanted us to at least have something. They had a play and none of the Black kids got in the play. And I said, okay, well, you know what they did? They did what they always do. They gave us a talent show. You know, it's like, okay, you can sing and you can dance. And I mean, most of us can, but we, I can't, but anyway, we've dealt with it so long that it's become part of our normal. And now all this uprising is showing us, no, that bothers your mental health. That stuff, you gotta work through all this, this social and this mental stuff. And it, I mean, I will be 60 this year and I have to work through this. And I'm a work in progress. But when I'm in a room with someone that, what was the question again, that don't, that I know.
Mm-hmm, that says Black Lives Don't Matter.
See, I don't know how to be quiet anymore. Because I was quiet for so long. For 59 years, I've been quiet. And I've allowed 47. Pain that was not my pain. So when you have a garbage can at your house and you keep putting trash in the can and just keep stuffing it down and stuffing it down, well, one day you got to take that trash out. Because it begins to stink and it begins to spill over. And so now the trash has spilled over. It stinks and I'm tired. So no, I will let you know that no, you, I know you don't care about me. I'm gonna let you know and let's have that real conversation.